Hello, this is The Money. I'm Richard Ady. Today we look at one of the biggest companies in the world. It's worth around $500 billion. It reaches into more than 2 billion lives. And when I say it reaches in, I mean it reaches in. If you use it, it knows more about you than any company has ever known about its, well, I nearly said customers, but that's not what you are. You're a user. And I'm talking about Facebook, of course. Daniel Shelson is at digital consultancy, Sydney, Stockholm.
I personally believe Facebook today to be the first time in history that anyone can reach any amount of people in a comparably inexpensive way. And what I mean by that is traditional media businesses, as we all know, you had a TV station and you reached some people, and those people, that audience was the backbone of the revenue you could generate. You had a magazine, you had an amount of readers. Today, that has been overhauled by Facebook. If you're an advertiser and you ask me what my audience is, my reply can basically be, well, how big do you want it to be? Because via Facebook, I can buy whatever audience I need for whatever piece of content I have.
Facebook is free to use because the users are the product. The information about them, their data, is what's valuable. Really, really valuable. Peter Marks is a software developer, but you probably know him as RN Breakfast's technology editor.
I looked at the second quarter results for this year, released in July. Now, they reported that they have 2.006 billion monthly active users, and it's still showing steady growth. So, you know, that's amazing after all these years. Most of their revenue, you know, the vast majority was $9.164 billion in advertising revenue. Now, 50% of that is still in the US, so they really are trying to reach out to the rest of the world. The next category was $157 million in payments and other fees, but that's nothing compared to the advertising revenue. The ARPU, which is usually a telecommunications phrase, the average revenue per user, is about $4.73 per person worldwide, but in the US it's much higher. It's almost $20 per user. The biggest expense is research and development, and of course, like all of these platforms, they know that they can't just be a one-trick pony, like Google is a search engine, Facebook is a social network. Eventually, that's going to end, and they need to find the next thing, and they're spending a lot of money looking at, you know, things like virtual reality. Their margin's very good, 47%, and keep in mind, Apple's margin is only 38%, although Apple, of course, makes hardware. Facebook is starting to look at making hardware, that may bring it down. And of course, they didn't pay a lot of tax, they paid just 13% tax.
What about Australian Facebook users? What do we know about them? Sarah Sloan's a PhD candidate at Griffith University. She's researching how businesses connect with their customers on social media.
There are 17 million monthly active users across Australia with Facebook. But in terms of how we use Facebook here in Australia compared to the rest of the world, we are definitely trending downwards. So we're not using Facebook as much as we used to. In fact, we're seeing that over the last year or so, we're posting about a third less original content. So we are still logging into Facebook, but it's more of a passive experience now. So just going on, liking, perhaps sharing occasionally, but we're not writing as much of our own status updates anymore. And if we compare that to the rest of the world, particularly amongst the Asian countries, which are seeing the biggest uptake of Facebook at the moment, it's more the private messaging that is being used in those Asian countries. So in fact, Facebook Messenger apps are now much more prevalent in use across those Asian countries compared to Facebook itself.
So if Australians are using it less, is that an issue for Facebook? Peter Marks.
According to Census Social Media Report released in June, 79% of Australians are on social media, which is up 10%. So maybe it's in decline, but it's still overall growing. We spend an average of 10 hours a week on Facebook, which, yes, the number of hours is down slightly from 12.5 hours a week last year. 81% of us use Facebook Messenger. I mean, that's extraordinary. This is something that, you know, is more than people would have used SMSs. You know, there are other social platforms, things like Snapchat, I think, is the next one. Instagram, of course, is part of Facebook. So although that's doing pretty well, it's really should be counted in there. Twitter, LinkedIn and Google Plus are a long way behind. And 56% of us use the internet more than five times a day. And I'm sure there's people who use it 100 times a day. Smartphone penetration is at 81%. So things like laptops, desktops, and tablets are all in decline. The smartphone is where the action is happening. And yeah, Facebook is totally dominant in social media at the moment. 94% of social media is Facebook.
When you're that dominant, it turns out, it doesn't matter if we're not spending as much time with you as we used to.
The less we use Facebook, the more valuable it can actually become. Because when we are logging on, we are perhaps spending less time per day on Facebook compared to our previous usage. But the time we are spending on Facebook is still quite useful, especially because if we're not writing as much original content anymore, we are consuming more content that's written by more of the media and also businesses. So it's not merely a social network anymore. It's definitely become a lot less personal, but still useful. And in fact, some sources are saying that we're starting to use Facebook as more of a personal portal to the world. So we are sort of curating our news feeds to give us the information that we find most valuable, but we might not be actually writing as much of our own content anymore.
On The Money today, we're looking at Facebook. If you use it, you know it as a way of keeping in touch and sharing things you find interesting with people you know. But really, it's an advertising business. It sells audiences to advertisers.
Facebook ads has been predicted to generate $33 billion in revenue just this year. But they are having to introduce some key changes to how they use our information. So, for instance, a lot of us would be familiar with the new emotions, reactions that Facebook brought in earlier this year. So instead of just liking a status or a comment these days, we can like, we can love, we can wow, we can ha-ha, and we can give the sad faces. So in actual fact, by bringing in just this one key change, Facebook has now been able to get not just one data point on us liking, but now six key different data points in terms of how we're interacting with content. And so they're utilising all of this information to be able to understand us a lot better, which then allows advertisers to better target us through their Facebook advertising.
Jonathan Taplin's the author of Move Fast and Break Things, How Facebook, Google and Amazon Cornered Culture and Undermined Democracy.
The business Facebook is in is known as surveillance capitalism. So essentially what they manufacture is a set of personal profiles, that is 2 billion personal profiles, that are incredibly specific. So it allows advertisers to target women who drink bourbon and drive trucks in Nashville, Tennessee. It is the kind of targeting system that people have always dreamed about, but now is actually coming true. The second thing they did was they understood that the world had to be a mobile world so that the emphasis was on the smartphone and that they could be with you at all times. And the average teenager checks their smartphone and checks in with Facebook about 120 times a day. So that ability to kind of be constantly in touch, know where you are in physical space, know what you like, know what you want, is an extraordinarily powerful engine.
It's so powerful, it's difficult to get your head around what this means.
Facebook knows a lot of things that we give it directly. I mean, you give it your birthday and it knows your sex and it knows where you live. And of course, then through your social network, it knows a lot about you. But there has been some research about the fact that when you like something, you're actually revealing more about yourself to them than even you know about yourself or even your friends know. And there has been some academic work done where friends were surveyed about, you know, your characteristics, and that was matched up against what Facebook thinks about you. And it's found to be incredible. Accurate, spookily accurate.
How does Facebook do that?
Maybe the best way to understand this is to think about how the Donald Trump campaign used Facebook during the election. So if they wanted to find, for instance, what they call voter suppression ads, if they wanted to track young African-American males and send them an ad that said that Hillary Clinton thought they were social predators, and send it to only young African-American males in Philadelphia, Milwaukee, Cleveland, Ohio, and a few other places where their race was very close, they could do that. But the ability to then track much more delicate things, such as the ability to understand what TV shows people watch, what news feeds are they reading? Are they more conservative? Are they liberal? Are they religious? Are they not religious? Do they believe in abortion rights or not? Facebook has all that data, and they can glean that just from the kind of things that you write. They could also tell that maybe you write some things on your Facebook post that says, I don't like immigrants coming into America. Well, then that goes on your profile as well. So the ability to kind of micro-target people based on their preferences, their beliefs, their religion, their sex, their race, everything, is something that Facebook can do with ease, and all in an automated system.
Technology, of course, is neutral. What this technology delivers is astonishingly well-targeted advertisements.
But look, that's not always a bad thing. I think that, yes, we are potentially getting a little bit sick of ads. You know, we're seeing a lot of ad fatigue, and we're downloading a lot more ad pop-up blockers these days. But if ads are better targeted towards us and they're things that we actually want to know more about and we want to potentially, you know, build a relationship with that brand, then if we're seeing only the ads that are most interesting to us, it does potentially increase the satisfaction of our social media experiences.
But Daniel Shelson says that when a company knows so much about you, so much that it seems spooky, then you can be nudged.
Say that you're buying a car. The platforms you use will know that you're about to buy a car before you do. They would have negotiated you as a client before you even made up your mind to buy a car. And when you get around to it, theoretically, a brand could have bought you as a client and already convinced you to buy their car, and your choice was never really in the mix.
Without you realizing.
Yes.
You can be that manipulated.
Absolutely, yeah.
Because of your online behavior.
Of course.
And what they know about you.
Yes. And that's not even me pushing any boundaries. This is baseline stuff.
And not all nudges are about which car you buy or what dress you purchase. Some are more consequential.
Facebook says 10 million people were exposed to politically divisive fake ads around the time of last year's US election. It claims those ads were purchased in Russia, and the company is now trying to soften the blow to its reputation.
Today, we're testing some new features on Newsfeed. An item may be flagged in your newsfeed if it has been disputed by an independent third-party fact-checker outside of Facebook. If you suspect a news story is fake, you can report it. It just takes a few taps. Your report helps us track and prevent fake news from spreading.
This seems like a big deal. One of the world's largest companies admits that some of the advertising it featured in the last presidential election was bought and paid for in Russia. But has this taken away any of Facebook's luster? Sarah Sloan.
Most people that use Facebook advertising for their businesses are small to medium-sized businesses. So I don't think that they're really going to see that that's going to have much of an impact on them. I mean, they're still seeing that Facebook ads are a great tool to reach a lot of new customers, simply because of the great targeting it allows you. So it allows users to find things that they're interested in. Okay, so instead of, for instance, Google ads, where people go and search for keywords, Facebook ads are going to show ads only to consumers that are most likely to be interested in them. So it's still a great tool for small and medium-sized businesses. But how Facebook mitigates those attitudes towards fake news and the Russian conspiracies and, yeah, the influences on elections is going to be interesting.
It will. In the meantime, if you want to advertise something to a particular audience, Facebook's a very good way to do it. Just ask Peter Marks.
I'm running a meetup for a very niche group of people. There's probably 30 potential people there. So I decided to create a page on Facebook and create an event in that page, and then I click the promote button, and that leads you down an amazing path where you can choose to reach people not only by the distance from the event, but by all sorts of demographics, including their education, the field of study, their finances, their income, their net worth, what generation they are, baby boomers, Gen X, millennials, whether they own their home. I mean, all sorts of amazing things, including, as we've seen recently in the US election, things like their political affiliations and interests. So I was able, for just a few dollars, to target exactly the group I wanted to reach, and it is very effective.
What did this cost, Peter?
You can set a budget. Because I was so well targeted, I wasn't trying to reach 22 million people. I spent, in the end, I set a budget of about $60 and I spent $30 of that. And they give you options saying if you want to raise this, you can get to more people. So it's a very efficient way for me to reach a very targeted audience.
But you can only target the audience that you're getting. And Facebook's demographics aren't what they used to be.
The users of Facebook have dramatically changed, even over the last 5 years. Now, we might be surprised to learn that the biggest demographic at the moment on Facebook is actually the 25 to 34-year-olds, and they account for just under 30% of all users. Now, teenagers are increasingly shunning the social network. So there are some teens that didn't even create a Facebook account, and they've gone straight to Instagram and Snapchat. And that's because they value the immediacy of those platforms, especially being able to send the private messages on Instagram, and also because of the fact that these things do disappear within 24 hours. So
that's on Snapchat, isn't it?
That's right, yeah. So on Snapchat, users are able to post a story, which is visible to their followers for 24 hours, and they're also able to send private messages. And in fact, private messages on Snapchat outnumber the public stories 5-1.
This is The Money on RN, the ABC Listen app, wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Richard Ady. Today we're looking at Facebook, which so far has been a massively successful seller of audiences to advertisers. But there are challenges. Younger people, teenagers especially, increasingly prefer other social media. And in countries like Australia, users aren't spending as much time on Facebook as they used to.
Facebook is definitely making a play to be more relevant, and I think that's really going to happen as they integrate more and more functionality into the Facebook platform. So, as I mentioned before, we're seeing more of a trend towards users wanting to send private messages. And so now Facebook Ads is investing more in terms of advertising in the Messenger platform itself. So we are increasingly seeing ads pop up in the Facebook Messenger app. I mean, some other changes we're also going to see is they're investing more in artificial intelligence in forms of things like chatbots and even having a virtual assistant. So Facebook's developed their own virtual assistant called M, which has gone through some trials recently.
Daniel Shelson says Facebook is much more than a website.
Think about Facebook not as a website that you log into and say hi to, you know, your friend Joe, but as an infrastructure. And on top of that infrastructure, you can build a social media platform, you can build an image sharing website, you can build a couple of messaging apps, but you can also build a marketplace, you can also build whatever you want. So it's a network of people and their information, and you can serve them with all kinds of apps, services, platforms, whatever you need. So that's what Facebook is turning into, because, I mean, some of us remember still like the search engine battle, right? We went from AltaVista to something else, and then all of a sudden it was just Google. And if you look at the Facebook IPO, for example, and back to that as a business case, some people made the case that, you know, well, we'll just sometime soon we'll just swift to another social network. And obviously, theoretically, yes, we could. But they have countered that by becoming the infrastructure of the social life on the web. And they will continue to invest in that.
The image sharing site Daniel's talking about is Instagram. It's owned by Facebook, and 800 million people used it last month. But how does it make money?
Ads. Straight up ads. It's an enormous ad platform today.
See, I don't see any ads in my Instagram feed at all.
Well, I want to be kind and say that you've got a unique feed, but then you maybe do not recognise them as ads.
Right.
Because I can guarantee you have ads in your feed.
Oh, okay. All right. I'm just not smart enough to see it.
Yeah. I mean, and there are basically two forms of ads. There are the traditional ad, which is just like promoted by. But then there are, I mean, if you move into the influencer space, there are the classical Instagram, a photo and some text. But where you normally would have your like location tag, it says paid for by brand.
Right. Okay. I think I do follow kind of geeky things like the London School of Economics and Sydney University and things like that.
They would be paying for subscriptions and stuff like that. I'm not going to put you in the corner.
Okay. Facebook also owns the messenger service WhatsApp, and just this week announced it's buying the anonymous compliment app used by teenagers, TBH. It's also developing more utility for its own Facebook Messenger, offering the ability to make payments.
Payments is interesting. They've got a patent in Australia for a payments messenger payment system, which seems like an odd thing to actually get a patent on. But yeah, so Apple has announced they're going to have Apple Pay via iMessages soon. Facebook is also going to do the same thing. I think both of them are coming next year. So what this means is that, say you go to a restaurant with a group of people and you want to share the bill, what you'll be able to do is one of you will just be able to pay, perhaps with your phone or your watch, and the other people will be able to send you their share just through a direct message using one of these platforms. What's interesting about it is they're not actually making any money out of it. It's a free service, so it's really just about driving engagement. It's another thing that brings people back to Facebook.
Instagram, WhatsApp, and TBH aren't Facebook's only acquisitions. 3 years ago, it bought the virtual reality company Oculus.
Virtual reality has the possibility of being a very compelling kind of experience where we put on some glasses and we're transported somewhere else in the world. Now, this company, Oculus, is at the very high end. They have very expensive equipment at the moment. I think it costs $500 for the headset, and then you need a big computer to run it as well. So that's, that. You know, you're looking at somebody spending $1,000. So that's obviously not going to take off in the marketplace. Just this week, they've announced a new headset is coming, a standalone headset, about $200 US, so that possibly will do it. Some of the applications, I think, for a social network in virtual reality are things like the next step in video conferencing. So say you've got a relative who can't come to the Christmas party, you could set up a 360 degree camera and they could be in a remote location and be wearing a headset and really feel like they are in the room. So potentially it's a very compelling idea. I don't know whether VR will be the thing, the next thing, but it possibly speaks to a world when the mobile phone, the smartphone, which is now totally dominant, starts to wane. And what will be the next thing? Maybe it'll just be glasses.
You can imagine teenagers being big users of virtual reality. They're already big users of Instagram, but they really like the image-sharing, message-sending Snapchat. Facebook doesn't own Snapchat.
And Facebook came to them and offered to buy them, and Snapchat turned them down. And Facebook essentially said, you're going to regret this. And Facebook went out and essentially cloned everything that Snapchat did and put it on all three of their services exactly at the point when Snapchat was going public. So Snapchat went public at $28 a share. Facebook launched the Snapchat killer. And today, Snapchat's shares are worth $13. So it shows the extraordinary power that Facebook has in the marketplace to kind of treat their competitors with disdain.
On The Money Today, we're looking at Facebook. It's big, rich, powerful, increasingly pervasive, and acquisitive. Some people think that it's dangerous. So what will it do next? Daniel Shelson.
God, if we only knew. Some people are looking forward to what they're going to do in virtual reality, because they obviously bought Oculus Rift, the developer of the headset, a couple of years back. And they're going to continue to develop the ecosystem we just talked about in terms of more apps utilizing their data on us, provided by us in new ways. But one of the really big things, I think, will be AR, augmented reality, in terms of the data that is already open on Facebook that we can log in and see, like you can check people up and see if are they married, are they not, the kids, whatever interests, so forth. I mean, you know, you can have a pair of lenses and go around and see that in front of you as a layer of the world. It's pushing the boundaries tech wise in terms of, can we actually manufacture those lenses? Don't know, but in terms of the data is already there.
One thing Facebook hasn't done is pay for content. Indeed, it, along with Google, has grabbed nearly all of the advertising that used to go to newspapers and fund journalism. Might that change? Peter Marks.
I think it's got to happen. Google has announced in the last few weeks some measures to actually help people pay for journalism. So it used to be that the first click was free. When you went through Google News and you got onto a site, you would be able to read it the first time. But they've now realized that that's not perhaps the best way, that it's up to the site, the actual news organization, who may be able to use cookies and other ways of identifying users to say, this is a user who does tend to pay for news. I'm going to be a bit more demanding. So they are realizing that the goose that laid the golden egg, this free news, use, which is able to be reused and repurposed and have different ads put alongside it. If you push it too hard, you actually will kill it. So I think the tide is turning. I mean, I pay for news, but I know a lot of people would not dream of it and find it terribly irritating when they get pop-ups and, you know, trucks driving across the story and all of these sorts of things we seem to see on the web at the moment.
Jonathan Taplin says Facebook's culture is changing.
I think for a long time, they just, you know, they were thought of as gods. They were thought of as the most brilliant people in the world. And now all of a sudden, there's a realization that Facebook may have been responsible for allowing the Russians to hack the American election. That's a pretty astonishing thing. And the strange thing is that Facebook built all these tools to allow people to target advertising, but had no idea how people might use them. So they were shocked to find out that people could absolutely target with very specific ads towards people who hate Jewish people. You could put in these keywords about Jews run the world, and I hate Jews and all these, and you could specifically advertise to people who had that inclination. And the same thing about all sorts of other hateful ideologies. So it's almost like a Dr. Frankenstein situation that they built this machine, but they had no idea how it could be misused. And so in terms of a culture, they're now waking up and trying to understand what is going on with their own invention. And they're obviously going to have to change quite radically in terms of taking more responsibility for the content that is on their service.
What about regulation, Peter Marks? Are we going to see more regulation of Facebook?
I don't know. It's very difficult. It's a multinational organization. Servers are not in this country. I think it's extremely difficult. And of course, by the time you bring in a regulation, things have moved on. The technology moves faster than the law in many, many cases. I think it's very difficult. I think that the stuff that's been done around advertising in elections is an example where regulation can be brought to bear and needs to be brought to bear. That platform was mightily abused by perhaps state actors in the recent American election. And that's an example where I think that election law is going to trump the internet. But it's very difficult, I think.
It's always difficult to regulate powerful actors.
Facebook as well is more powerful than most governments. And a lot is pointing to the development in which they will continue to grow, attract better and better talent. And as we, I'm not going to be too deep now, but as we move into, you know, automation, artificial intelligence and challenging job markets, maybe we end up in a society where a majority of the really smart people and a lot of the monetary value is compiled at a very few amount of firms.
Thanks to Daniel Shelson, who runs the digital consultancy Sydney Stockholm. Also Peter Marks, software developer and RN Breakfast technology editor. Jonathan Taplin, author of Move Fast and Break Things, How Facebook, Google and Amazon Cornered Culture and Undermined Democracy. And Sarah Sloan, who's researching social media and how business can use it for her PhD at Griffith University. The Money is produced by Kate Piercy. Our sound engineer is Judy Rapley. I'm Richard Adie.